Welcome to Africa Now. Today's show features plight of Chagosians, update of the Mauritius UK agreement. Africa Now is next. Welcome to the show. I'm Wiza Muntali. The music in the background is Nabu Kofa by Dorothy Ashby. And we play that commemorating Jazz Appreciation Month. Today, David Vine contextualizes and provides updates of the Mauritius-UK agreement made in October 2024 and what it means for Chagosians who were forcibly removed from their Indian Ocean homeland of Chagos Islands by the UK to clear the area for a US military base on Diego Garcia Island. In early October 2024, the UK announced that it had come to an agreement with Mauritius and that the UK would hand back Chagos Islands to Mauritius. But under the agreement, the UK maintains control of Diego Garcia. Also, the agreement is subject to a treaty by the parties involved. David Vine is a writer and political anthropologist and former professor of anthropology at American University. David Vine is also the author of the book Island of Shame, The Secret History of the U.S. Military Base on Diego Garcia. Here is my conversation with David Vine, which we had yesterday. David Vine, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much, Muiza. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Always a pleasure to talk with you as well, to give us insights on this critical issue, which is rarely discussed in U.S. media. And I want us, before we get into the specifics of the issue, if you could put us up to speed. The last time we spoke, the UK and Mauritius government had made an agreement of the UK ceding back to Mauritius the Chagos Islands archipelago back to Mauritius.
Exactly, including Diego Garcia. Mm-hmm. Some listeners surely are very familiar with the story, but most people in the United States, most people around the world have no idea about the Chagos Islands and Diego Garcia. Diego Garcia has been in the news more than ever recently for a couple reasons. The Trump administration has sent several stealth bombers there recently to threaten Iran. It's part of growing threats to wage a war against Iran. Meanwhile, Diego Garcia also was in the news because of the Trump's tariffs. It was one of the strange places in the world that got tariffed. Tariffs were issued on an island that is home to currently only a very large U.S. military base. And that, of course, is the core of what we're here to talk about today. The part of the story that almost no one knows about is that military base, that U.S. military base in the middle of the Indian Ocean on this small island called Diego Garcia. It's about the size of Manhattan, with a big lagoon in the middle. That military base only exists because in the late 1960s and early 1970s, the U.S. government, with the help of the British government, removed the entire local indigenous population called the Chagosians, the people of the Chagos Islands, and deported them 1,200 miles away, dumped them in exile in the western Indian Ocean islands of Mauritius and the Seychelles. And that's where they've lived for the most part ever since. Some have since migrated to Britain. So there's a Chagosian diaspora around the world. It's important to note that, of course, these were two white-led governments, the U.S. and U.K. governments, that expelled an entire population of African and Indian ancestry. The Chagosians and their ancestors had lived in the Chagos Islands and on Diego Garcia since around the time of the American Revolution. The Chagosians are the descendants of enslaved Africans and indentured Indians who over time created a new and distinct people and society in the Chagos Islands. That is, of course, until the U.S. government came along and the U.S. military had grown interested in creating a military base on Diego Garcia in the late 1950s and early 1960s. And through a series of secret negotiations with the British government, which controlled the Chagos Islands as part of its colony of Mauritius at the time, through secret negotiations, the two governments hatched a plan to create a military base for the US government and in the process expel the entire Chagosian population. And in exchange, the US government agreed to pay the British government a secret payment of $14 million, which they did in a way that avoided the oversight of both Congress and Parliament. And the British government agreed to do the dirty work of getting rid of the Chagosians. In fact, some US military personnel also played a role in some of the final deportations on Diego Garcia, and it's part of that process. Quite horrifically, the whole story is a horror and has been identified as a crime against humanity by Human Rights Watch and others. But in that final deportation process on Diego Garcia, British government agents and U.S. Navy personnel rounded up the Chagosians' pet dogs and proceeded to gas them in sealed cargo sheds and then burned their carcasses in front of the Chagosians, which, as one of the Chagosians' lawyers pointed out, sent a pretty strong message about what might happen if the Chagosians resisted their expulsion. In fact, Chagosians have resisted from the beginning. They protested on Diego Garcia that they didn't want to leave their home, as you might imagine. And ever since their final expulsion, Chagosians in exile have been demanding the right to return home and demanding proper compensation for their expulsion and all that they have suffered in exile. They were plunged into profound poverty as a community after arriving in exile with no resettlement assistance, no jobs, no homes, just in most cases a box and a straw mat was all they were allowed to take with them from their homes and the land of their ancestors. And they've waged a valiant and a very tumultuous up and down struggle against both the US and British governments for now more than half a century. And I'm happy to say are closer to going home than ever and closer to receiving some proper compensation than ever. This is actually in a time where there seems to be so much bad news on a daily basis. This has been one glimmer of hope. And we could be days or perhaps weeks away from a final sealed agreement that would allow the Chagosians to go home and would ensure they receive some proper compensation.
And as you said, there seems to be some glimmer of hope. And this is germinating from the agreement which took place last year when we spoke last. They just made the agreement. That was in October of 2024. And I think we spoke in November, soon after that, where the UK and the Mauritius government signed an agreement which the UK would cede the Chagos Islands to Mauritius, the Chagos Archipelago. There are many islands there. And the only asterisk is that the military base, the UK, administered military base, the UK, US military base would still be under UK control, at least under a 99-year lease that they would be paying, I guess, to Mauritius, right?
Exactly. The deal followed a ruling by the International Court of Justice in 2019 that determined, as many had long before determined, that Mauritius is the rightful sovereign over the Chagos Islands. The Chagos Islands were part of colonial Mauritius. And when Mauritius was trying to gain its independence in the 1960s, basically the British government forced the Mauritian government to give up the Chagos Islands in exchange for independence, which was clearly illegal under international law, clearly illegal under the UN's rules of decolonization. And on that basis, the Mauritian government took the British government to the International Court of Justice in The Hague and won a historic ruling in 2019, which was then followed up by the United Nations, which affirmed the International Court of Justice ruling that said that Mauritius is sovereign over the Chagos Islands and that the UK should return sovereignty and control over the islands as quickly as possible. And that the UN General Assembly in a resolution overwhelmingly supported this ruling. The only people who voted against it were, the only governments who voted against it were, you can guess, the US and British governments and a few of their allies, Hungary being one of them. In fact, the UN resolution was so overwhelming, it was actually, the vote was more overwhelming than votes that Russia has lost in the UN General Assembly in recent years since its invasion and war in Ukraine. Unfortunately, initially, the British government, not surprisingly, ignored the International Court of Justice and the UN. And that is until 2022, when the conservative Liz Truss government in Britain announced it was going to begin negotiations with the Mauritian government to resolve all outstanding issues, including sovereignty and the return of the Chagosians to their homeland. And it took a while, but as you said, last October, under the new Labour government in Britain, the two governments, the UK and Mauritian governments, announced a deal that they said they would then finalize with a treaty. Now, that treaty was not signed by the time Donald Trump came into office. And there was a lot of concern that Trump would try to kill the deal, because basically after the announcement of the October 24, 2024 deal, a right-wing campaign conducted by politicians in the UK and in the US attempted to kill the deal, employing the media and basically using the China fear-mongering, to put it bluntly, to try to kill the deal. They portrayed the deal as being a gift to China, that somehow the deal would allow China to perhaps take over Diego Garcia or build its own military base in the Chagos Islands. Nothing could be further from the truth. This deal actually showed the power and strength of the alliance, close alliance between Mauritius, the UK, and the US. The US, the Biden administration, came out immediately and supported the deal. Well, the same day it was announced, Mauritius's closest other ally is India. India's long been at odds with China, of course. It's, other than Pakistan, China would be its greatest foe. And so there was a lot of fear that President, newly elected President Trump would kill this deal, following the lead of right-wing, far-right politicians in Britain and the U.S. But again, one of the rays of sunlight since Trump has taken office, pleased to report that indications are Trump will support the deal. This is what he indicated when Prime Minister Starmer visited Washington and the White House. And just in the past couple weeks, there's been another indication that Trump continues to support the deal and that it will go through and that a treaty will be signed by the Mauritian and British governments again, perhaps in a matter of days or weeks. So at a time when there is so much bad news, this really is one small but very significant for the Chagossians piece of good news, and for the people and government of Mauritius as well, which is regaining sovereignty over islands that were taken from it unlawfully. As you said, part of the deal, though, involves the Mauritian government leasing control and effectively sovereignty over Diego Garcia to the UK government for a period of at least 99 years. And what will this do? This will ensure the continued operation of the base on Diego Garcia for those 99 years, or if not more. This does also lead to the one real flaw in the agreement, and Chagossians and others, myself included, have been demanding that in the finalized treaty that they correct that major flaw. And the major flaw is that the initial agreement said that Chagossians could go back to all their islands in the Chagos archipelago except Diego Garcia. And this, of course, was very upsetting, to say the least, to Chagossians who trace their ancestry or were born in Diego Garcia, and is, of course, absurd because there are civilian populations living next to U.S. military bases around the world, including in none other than Guantanamo Bay, one of the other most secretive bases on Earth. And everyone knows that Chagossians could live. There's a significant part of Diego Garcia is not occupied by the base. An entire arm of the island is not occupied by the base. And there are civilian workers living and working on the base right now, mostly Filipinos, some Mauritians and others. And Chagossians then have asked to take up those jobs as well. And could move to Diego Garcia tomorrow because there is existing infrastructure there. The other islands, some significant work would need to be undertaken to rebuild the infrastructure and make life possible for Chagossians resettling on the islands, which they are enthusiastic to do. And one of the other positives of the agreement was that money, in addition to compensating Chagossians, the UK government promised money for infrastructure that Mauritius could use to rebuild infrastructure and make resettlement possible.
Again, that's David Vine. And he's a political anthropologist, and we are looking at the plight of Chagossians, updating the Mauritius-UK agreement, which would hopefully enable Chagossians who were forcibly removed from their islands in the Chagos Islands and the Chagos Archipelago in the Indian Ocean many years ago in the late 60s, and we're doing an update on that situation today. And as you were talking about the current administration, the Trump administration seemingly to go along with the agreement, but then there's still so many moving parts because, as you know, there's been this the tariff war that he's unleashed on many countries, China, of course, being number one target on that. And you just mentioned how some of the people against the agreement, both in the UK and in the United States, particularly people like Nigel Farage of the UK Reform Party. And then there's even rumors about the US Secretary of State Marco Rubio's role as well, that he's ambivalent about the deal. This has read one article that you talked about that. If you could, I wanted to hash that out a bit more on the, especially considering that Diego Garcia being in the Indian Ocean close to the Asian continent, almost in midpoint between Asia and Africa, but you have this situation with Trump looking at the China, and how would that play out? Even though, as you explained, there's more connection with India and Mauritius in many ways, both because people in Mauritius, a lot of them trace their ancestry from India. And so there's a long history of connection that, but still, is it still possible that the deal at the last minute could be really taken apart because of this other element of this tariff war that's taken place, and some of this present administration seems to change overnight. So how do you, where do you see it in light of all, even though so far it seems like they're going to go ahead with it and support it, but how do you see other forces undermining it? Are they, as I mentioned, where is the State Department, the U.S. State Department on this?
Yeah, it's the Trump administration, of course, is incredibly hard to predict what they will do, incredibly erratic, to say the least. So it's hard to know where they'll be tomorrow. But as I mentioned before, all indications are that Trump supports this deal and that as a result, it can and will go through. Now, that said, anything can happen in international relations generally, and deals that look to be finalized can fall through at the last minute for a variety of reasons. And there remains a danger that Trump or his administration could find a way to kill the deal one way or another. As you mentioned, Senator Marco Rubio, when he was still a senator, was one of the politicians in the United States that was speaking publicly to try to kill the deal, again, using China fear-mongering, really racist, xenophobic, anti-Asian fear-mongering about China to try to kill the deal and just making stuff up. I mean, this is straight up conspiracy theory that somehow this deal was going to be a gift to China, and nothing could be, again, further from the truth. And why were they, and like you said, people like Nigel Farage, other Boris Johnson, other right-wing politicians in the UK engaged in this fear-mongering campaign? They were engaged in this campaign because they want to hold on to British colonialism. They want to hold on to Britain's last created colony on Earth. Rather than accepting the rule of international law and the ruling of the International Court of Justice. Again, has been, the deal itself is one rare piece of good news for international law, for resolving international disputes through negotiations and diplomacy rather than through war and violence. And again, we are on the cusp of the finalization of this agreement with a treaty, but it is certainly possible that anything could happen. And that's part of why Chagossians, a group of five different Chagossian groups representing the vast majority of Chagossians in exile, recently published a statement urging the two governments, Britain and Mauritius, to finalize the deal by signing the treaty and improving it by ensuring they could go back to all their islands, including Diego Garcia. And people can find this statement that they issued on the website for the U.S. support group for Chagossians, which is called Let Us Return USA. Let Us Return USA. And the website is letusreturnusa.org. Letusreturnusa.org. You can read their statement enunciating nine different principles for resettlement and proper compensation. So, it is my hope that we will have, you know, the final good news that the treaty has been signed shortly. But as you pointed out, anything can happen.
And as we're talking about India, the vice president is currently, as we're speaking, in India, at least up to an hour ago. So as we're speaking, as we're having discussion today, do you see the U.S. Vice President's discussions in India touching upon this issue?
It's certainly possible because the initial agreement announced in October included a reference to India being part of the negotiations as well as the US. So it really involved four governments in various fashions. It's been unclear what role exactly India played, but I don't expect India to play any role, certainly not in scuttling the deal, in killing the deal. So it appears that they have only been supportive, as the Biden administration was before the Trump administration. So the only other thing to be said, I think, is to point out, you know, why the U.S. government, the U.S. military wants to hang on to this island so badly. U.S. and British politicians and military analysts and some far too many journalists in my mind talk about this island and the military base as being critical to U.S. national security, British national security, global security, peace. Again, this could not be further from the truth. This base in the middle of the Indian Ocean, and you know, you could just ask to begin with, what the heck does a military base in the middle of the Indian Ocean, thousands of miles from the borders of the UK, Britain, and the US, what does that have to do with protecting either country? And again, the answer is nothing. This base has been a major launch pad for a long series of endless wars in the greater Middle East. All the major wars and combat operations that the U.S. government has been involved in the Middle East have involved Diego Garcia in one fashion or another. Many Chagossians have all sorts of misgivings about one of their islands being occupied by a military base that has played such a destructive and deadly role in the world, including in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. But first and foremost, in their minds, they overwhelmingly want to go home or want to have the right to return home, as well as receiving proper compensation for having had their homeland stolen from them and for being forced to live in exile for now more than half a century. And of course, far too many Chagossians have died in exile, unable to ever go back home, unable to visit in most cases ever the graves of their ancestors. And now there are a dwindling number of Chagossians who were born in the islands, and then most of them just want to be able to go back home and die, you know, where they're, as Olivier Bancou, one of their leaders, put it, you know, where their umbilical cords are buried, where their ancestors are buried, their natal lands. It seems not too much to ask, and after waging an incredibly valiant David and Goliath kind of struggle for more than half a century, Chagossians are so close to achieving finally, some measure of justice.
You're listening to a conversation with David Vine, a writer and political anthropologist and former professor of anthropology at American University. The conversation contextualizes and provides updates on the Mauritius UK agreement made in October 2024 and what it means for Chagossians who were forcibly removed from their Indian Ocean homeland of Chagos Islands by the UK to clear the area for a US military base on Diego Garcia Island. The music in the background is You Don't Say by Melba Liston. And we play that as we continue to commemorate Jazz Appreciation Month. You're listening to Africa Now on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C., your jazz and justice station. Now back to the conversation. And as you said, it's the use of the military base in so many wars from Iraq to Afghanistan that this particular base, the base on Diego Garcia, has been used. You've written extensively on U.S. military bases worldwide. If you could refresh our memories, how many are there in the whole in the entire globe, and also just the amount of destruction that they cause as well on the environment.
Indeed, Diego Garcia is just one of somewhere between 750 to 800 U.S. military bases abroad. That is eight U.S. military bases outside the 50 states and in Washington, D.C. And these bases have encircled the globe for decades now, some since not long after independence, but this current huge network of military bases really dates to World War II. And while the numbers have fluctuated since World War II, the bases have been a major part of U.S. imperial power in the post-World War II era. And again, while many of its the defenders of this system, this network of bases, this empire of bases, as some refer to it, many of the defenders say that the bases have ensured U.S. national security and ensured global peace, and really such claims should be laughed at. U.S. bases abroad have been overwhelmingly offensive in nature, allowing the U.S. military to launch and maintain wars from Vietnam to Iraq and Afghanistan and far, far beyond. And indeed, the bases have had numerous negative impacts on locals, on people in the United States, beginning with the cost of these bases. $66 billion a year it costs U.S. taxpayers to maintain U.S. bases abroad on an annual basis, while so much of our infrastructure at home, of course, is crumbling. And meanwhile, the bases, like bases around the world and belonging to all nations, have terrible impacts and effects on the environment, cause terrible damage to water, soil, air, and it's part of the larger U.S. military infrastructure, are part of why the U.S. military has the largest carbon footprint of any institution on Earth. Fossil fuels required to run and build U.S. bases around the globe are massive. And one of many reasons why a growing number of people across the political spectrum are calling for the closure of U.S. bases abroad. And that does lead me to mention another effort I was involved in recently. A group of activists, veterans groups, scholars, and advocacy organizations published an open letter to the Trump administration calling for the closure of unnecessary bases abroad for a whole variety of reasons, beginning with the costs at this time when the Trump administration says it is concerned about waste and in the U.S. federal budget. One place to immediately save billions of dollars would be by closing so many of these wasteful bases abroad.
And as we talk about the waste, the both the monetary waste as well as the environmental waste, what are the plans as people from Diego Garcia and the rest of the Chagos Islands, when hopefully they make a full return back? Is there going to be some part in the compensation plan of the environmental cleanup that has to happen because of, as you mentioned, the carbon footprint of U.S. military bases and other environmental destruction that the military bases bring into various places? What is there in the plan to make sure that is properly addressed?
Yeah, Chagosians have been planning for and thinking about resettlement for a long time and have ideas for how they could sustain their societies once more on the islands, including with high-end tourism, which actually has a relatively limited environmental impact compared to sort of mass tourism, as well as some coconut-based industries. The islands were formerly coconut plantations, and Chagosians are incredibly skilled in a number of the kinds of work associated with processing coconuts and coconut oil, and other coconut-based industries. And that could be another foundation of resettled and renewed society there. In terms of the environmental damage caused by the base on Diego Garcia, is fairly well documented, that the base during its construction and expansion has had some fairly severe environmental impacts. However, as I mentioned before, the island it's shaped sort of like a V, and the base only takes up about a third of the total island, and only on the left side of the V. As far as anyone knows, there is no at least significant environmental damage on the other side of the island, which is also where the Chagosians that once inhabited the capital of Diego Garcia, called East Point. So the hope is that there wouldn't be any significant environmental cleanup necessary for resettlement on that side of the island. And, you know, there are thousands of U.S. military personnel and civilian workers living on the left side of the island, on the base itself, where Chagosians again could move tomorrow, which is not to say that their lives and well-being are being protected, because their U.S. bases around the world have, of course, endangered and harmed the lives of military personnel, of locals, of people working on the bases, because of a whole range of contamination and other environmental hazards that bases cause. But there's reason to believe Chagosians could resettle without any significant environmental cleanup. And it's important to point out the base on Diego Garcia is at least 150 miles from the nearest other Chagos island. So environmental damage has not affected any of the other islands that Chagosians would be resettling.
And actually, if you could explain to us the other islands that would also be part of the resettlement. Of course, Diego Garcia being the largest and the most, the one that has the infrastructure. Whereas what are the other islands which they would be able to inhabit?
The Chagos Archipelago is comprised of around 56 islands in total. And Chagosians historically occupied, lived in, and settled on three main groups of islands, Diego Garcia being one of them, and then islands called Parospanos and the Solomon Islands. Both are atolls with multiple islands occupied. And Chagosians are seeking to go back to the Parospanos and Solomon Islands in addition to Diego Garcia. And indeed, the ruins of their homes and churches and schools and other infrastructure are still there and visible in many cases on Parospanos and Solomon, but the infrastructure would need to be significantly rebuilt, really from scratch. But when you compare, and that would cost some money, and there are estimates out there that in the tens of millions of dollars or pounds. But compared to the literally billions of dollars invested in the U.S. military base on Diego Garcia, the money that it would take to rebuild infrastructure on all the islands for resettled Chagosian society is really quite tiny.
And before we go, I also wanted to just touch on what some of the sentiments of the Chagosans are within the community. Is there full unanimity on the agreement that's taken place? I mean, you alluded to some of the concerns especially the issue of the leasing and also the lack of being able to we settle on Diego Garcia. But if you could also touch on what are some of the concerns and also what are some of the viewpoints within the Chagos community in the diaspora.
As I mentioned, the majority of Chagosians are supportive of the deal and demanding that it be improved to ensure they can return to all their islands, including Diego Garcia, the one island that was excluded from the initially announced deal. There are some Chagosians who are opposed to Mauritian sovereignty over the islands. They would like to see the UK maintain sovereignty over the Chagos Islands. And I think there are complicated reasons for that. Partly the Mauritian government, its record of treatment for the Chagosians is quite spotty. It's improved dramatically over time, including when the Mauritian government and Chagosians allied with one another to take the case against Britain to the International Court of Justice. But especially in the early decades, the Mauritian government did not do well in taking care of Chagosians as they were dumped in Mauritius and exiled there. And there was Chagosians experienced a range of discrimination and still do to some significant degree from Mauritian citizens. So there's a complicated relationship there that I think is part of why some Chagosians oppose Mauritian sovereignty, but we're talking about a small minority of the population. There are also, since around 2002, Chagosians won the right to full British citizenship. And after winning that right, large numbers of Chagosians have migrated to Britain, mostly around London and a few in Manchester and some other parts of Britain. And as a result, they've put down roots there, and at least as far as an exiled population, diasporic population goes. And some of them have developed attachments to Britain and to the United Kingdom and want to see Britain remain sovereign in the islands. There's one other concern that Chagosians, I think, across the spectrum of Chagosians have raised, and that is that they were excluded from the negotiations between the UK and Mauritius. And as I mentioned before, clearly also the US and Indian governments played roles in these negotiations. Chagosians were excluded completely, which is a longstanding pattern in this entire history where Chagosians have been excluded from all the negotiations and dealings that determined their fate and resulting in their exile. So many were understandably quite angered that they were excluded from these negotiations. But as I mentioned before, the vast majority, it's clear, are in support of a final agreement that would transfer or recognize Mauritian sovereignty over the islands. And as long as it ensures Chagosians can return to all their islands and receive the promised compensation that the initial agreement detailed.
And the compensation that you talked about is going to be administered in a trust by the Mauritian government, the government of Mauritius.
Well, it's unclear what exactly will the compensation will look like and how it will be administered, but that is certainly one possibility. Personally, I would recommend that Britain administer the compensation. I think it'd be simpler, especially because some Chagosians live in Seychelles to this day. Some live in other parts of the world, including France and Switzerland. And having the UK administer the compensation would be, I think, far simpler. And the UK is the party that is paying, although it's unclear what contributions the US government is making toward the compensation and toward the deal as a whole. It's one of the other secrets that has been kept in the background. And I've long said, and Human Rights Watch in describing the expulsion of the Chagosians and their continued exile as a crime against humanity, Human Rights Watch and I and others have said clearly that the US government, as well as the British government, are both responsible for paying proper compensation to Chagossians for all the crimes that have been inflicted upon them.
David, again, thank you very much for updating us on the situation of the Chagossians and the Mauritius UK agreement.
Well, it's a pleasure, and thank you so much for being one of the all too rare voices in the media who has called attention to the Chagossians' struggle for justice and the history that has come to before now.
Well, thank you very much for always providing us the nuances.
Thanks, Musa.
You've just been listening to a conversation I had yesterday with David Vine, a writer and political anthropologist and former professor of anthropology at American University. In the conversation, David Vine contextualizes and provides updates of the Mauritius-UK agreement made in October 2024 and what it means for Chagossians who were forcibly removed from their Indian Ocean homeland of Chagos Islands by the UK to clear the area for a US military base on Diego Garcia. In early October 2024, the UK announced that it had come to an agreement with Mauritius and that the UK would hand back Chagos Islands to Mauritius. You can revisit the conversation on Africa Now's SoundCloud page. That's Africa Now Online on SoundCloud. And now we're going to commemorate Earth Day, which was yesterday, April 22nd, and we continue to commemorate National Poetry Month with a poem from our archives entitled Privatizing Life by Omakengo Dibinga. Dr. Omakengo Dibinga is a motivational speaker, trilingual poet, TV talk show host, rapper, and professor of cross-cultural communication at American University. Here is the poem, Privatizing Life.
Privatizing Life. By the time you finish reading this, 17 children worldwide will have lost their lives because 8 children die a minute in pursuit of potable water in order to survive. Partner that with the loss of husbands and wives, and you may end up cursing your eyes because you know these preventable mortalities will rise since water is now being privatized. Fed up with monopolies over diamonds, gold, coltan, and coal, man is now on a mission to monopolize Mother Nature's soul. No longer able to swim and drink from our world's deltas and tributaries, fees for life-giving water will have to be paid to evade the obituaries. Structural adjustment programs have become the equivalent of fasting, for our world's poorest governments must privatize water for loans everlasting. African growth and opportunity is being stunted by acts most tyrannic, while corporations scramble for water rights in a Berlin conference-style panic. The rights of the human and earth are no longer relevant, for the right to profit now sets the precedent. Lower water standards and a depleted water supply are soon to follow, as Mother Earth becomes the liquid-deficient Mars of tomorrow. From blood diamonds to blood water, history is rearing its third eye, forewarning us of the coming strife, which we can no longer deny. Civil wars will be waged in the wanton pursuit of the world's water, recreating conflicts reminiscent of present-day patterns of slaughter. The developed world often acts in the most undeveloped methods by capitalizing on the lifeline of impoverished livelihoods. From protecting corporate interests to interring corpses, the IFIs have joined in the trademarking of our life-giving resources. But many of us will fight this battle, and that should now be apparent. For we won't allow the blue bloodline of Mother Earth to become a patent. As man's oil of the new millennium, the poorest of the poor dangle their lives below profit's pendulum. Remaining inactive is an act in support of privatization and the death of man. So the blood of the 17 children that just died also lies on your hands.
WPFW presents Still We Rise, our 48th anniversary celebration on Friday, April 25th from 7 until 11 p.m. at Martin's Crosswinds in Greenbelt, Maryland. Entertainment will be provided by vocalist Navasha Dea and her trio, and WPFW programmers and poets Esther Everam and Zain El Amin. The evening includes an award ceremony, dinner, and dancing to the music of DJ James Funk. That's Still We Rise, WPFW's 48th anniversary celebration. Details at WPFWFM.org.
And that was a poem from our archives entitled Privatizing Life by Omakongo Dibinga. And we play that as we commemorate Earth Day, which was April 22nd yesterday, and as we continue to commemorate National Poetry Month. Dr. Omakongo Dibinga is a motivational speaker, trilingual poet, TV talk show host, rapper, and professor of cross-cultural communication at American University. The music in the background of the poem was Water No Get Enemy by Fela Kuti. And earlier on in the show, you heard David Vine, who's a writer and political anthropologist and former professor of anthropology at American University. He is also the author of the book Island of Shame, The Secret History of the U.S. Military Base on Diego Garcia. The full show will be available on Africa Now's SoundCloud page. That's at Africa Now Online on SoundCloud. The music in the background is African Moon by Jonathan Butler, and we play that as we continue to commemorate Jazz Appreciation Month. That's it for Africa Now for today. I'm your host, Muiza Muntali. Up next is Headline News, followed by Sha'anana with Zain El Amin, which looks at issues in Northern Africa and the Middle East, particularly spotlighting the plight of Palestinians. And that's followed by the women's collective Sophie's Parlor, which is followed by The Browder File with Tony Browder, which is followed by Black Agenda Radio with Margaret Kimberly, which is followed by Convite Lakai with Eugenia Charles, which looks at issues in Haiti. Check out Africa Now on Facebook and on X, formerly Twitter. That's at Africa Now Online. Also, Africa Now is archived on iTunes Podcast and on SoundCloud. Search under Africa Now Online on SoundCloud. That's Africa Now Online on SoundCloud. Thanks to Africa Now's executive producer and co-host James Pope. And thanks to our engineers, Michael Nicella and Claire Chapman. And thanks to our research fellow volunteers, Chanda Kozer and Funangonda, and our Africa World Now Project Collective of Dr. Tasmin Siddiqui, Dr. Keisha Khan Perry, Dr. Josh Myers, and Kurt Erdison. And thanks to the entire team here at WPFW and to you for joining us. Continue to support all the great programs on WPFW. We're going to leave you the closing song entitled Galupe Bosan by Chegos Tambor Group. Thank you. Have a great day. Have a great week. And stay safe.
Galoupe bosan pou de fam se gon bat mama o.
For WPFW News in Washington, I'm Sue Goodwin. Today is Wednesday, April 23rd. Here are some headlines. The Environmental Protection Agency has informed more than 450 employees who work in the agency's Office of Environmental Justice and who work on diversity, equity, and inclusion that they will be fired or reassigned effective July 31st. The news comes months after the agency placed 171 of the office's employees on administrative leave. The reduction in force could effectively end much of the EPA's work tackling pollution in historically disadvantaged communities. Kyla Bennett, Director of Science Policy at Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, said in an email, quote, "These RIFs will ensure that overburdened communities will continue to suffer needlessly," close quote. In other news, Secretary of State Marco Rubio unveiled a plan yesterday to make major cuts to the State Department, calling the government's diplomatic agency bloated and bureaucratic and, quote, "more beholden to radical political ideology than advancing America's core national interests," close quote. The plan aims to reduce staff in the U.S. by 15% while closing and consolidating more than 100 bureaus worldwide as part of the Trump administration's America First mandate. The most dramatic change is the elimination of the Office of the Undersecretary for Civilian Security, Democracy, and Human Rights. Trump administration officials call the office a hotbed of liberal activism. Some elements of that office would be cut and folded into an Office for Foreign Assistance and Humanitarian Aid. In more news, an Israeli airstrike on a school sheltering displaced families in northern Gaza today killed at least 23 people, while another hit a children's hospital, local health officials said. Medics said the airstrike on the Yafa school in Gaza City set fires to tents and classrooms. Also, the Gaza Health Ministry said an Israeli missile hit the upper building of a children's hospital in Gaza City, damaging the intensive care unit and destroying the solar panel system that feeds the facility with power. No one was killed in the hospital strike. In related news, health officials in Gaza say more than 400 dialysis patients have died during the 18-month war because of lack of proper treatment. Israel has restricted the supply of humanitarian aid throughout much of the war and imposed a complete blockade more than 6 weeks ago. Earlier today, the foreign ministers of Germany, France, and Britain jointly called on Israel to adhere to international law and allow the unhindered passage of humanitarian aid into Gaza. Their statement says, quote, "Palestinian civilians, including 1 million children, face an acute risk of starvation, epidemic disease, and death. This must end," close quote. It continues, quote, "Humanitarian aid must never be used as a political tool. Israel is bound under international law to allow the unhindered passage of humanitarian aid," close quote. For WPFW News,